Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to episode 59 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available exclusively via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Jay Lethal, the undisputed champion of the world, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
Today, I welcome to the show Baseball Prospectus senior fantasy writer, the 2015 Labor Mixed League champion, and a true fantasy baseball expert, Mike Gianella. Mike, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's good to talk to you. I think the last time I saw you was, I want to say, in Milwaukee.
It absolutely was, yeah, and it was, goodness, it's almost a year ago now that time flies. Yeah, that was a lot of fun that weekend, frankly.
Yeah, the BP events, which unfortunately they're not promoting or they're doing anymore, are a lot of fun, and I always tried to get to one a year, and I don't live anywhere near Milwaukee, but I just decided there are a lot of BP people in Chicago, and I saw some of them, and then I got to Milwaukee, so yeah, that was a fun week.
I mean, what a great time. We had Nick Valeris there and Jordan Gorash and so many of the guys. Yeah, that was a great trip.
Yep.
Here's a quick plug for BP to do more of those events, because those were a lot of fun, so... But, Mike, I got you on this today because we're doing a fantasy baseball week here on my site, and I really couldn't think of a bigger expert or somebody to have on that would be better to talk fantasy baseball than you and help us preview 2016 a little bit.
That's great. You know, I'll definitely do what I can to help, although there certainly are a lot of experts out there, so I appreciate the compliment.
Well, I want to start with I've played fantasy baseball, goodness, for probably 10 or 15 years, and I always seem to finish in the middle of the pack. I'm not the worst player, but I never seem to win my league. So I want to have you kind of aim your answers a little bit in that vein and towards those people, maybe not complete newbies, but some people that have played for a few years but certainly aren't on the level of playing in, you know, tout wars and labor and those kind of things. So if we're assuming, you know, a pretty standard league, what are some of the bigger mistakes you see, you know, players make in fantasy baseball?
Well, that's a broad question, so I'll try to give a couple answers. I see a lot of, and I want to say newbie mistakes, because like you said, Ryan, you're certainly not a newbie, but one thing I see players do is, and I think we'll touch on this later based on your agenda, in shallower leagues, they get a little trigger happy, and, you know, they see somebody, you know, out there, and they think, oh, this guy's doing better, and they don't have patience, and they cut the guy. The same thing happens with trades, where someone makes an offer, players in a slump, they get a little bit too excited, and they think, oh, I'm just going to put this guy in the slump, and then sure enough, the player comes back. Now, that can work the other way. Last year, in an expert league I was in with a 12-team, somebody traded me, and I think this was in early June, Dallas Keuchel for Lucas Duda, which, you know, right now sounds like ridiculous, but if you think back to Keuchel, you know, Keuchel had been a solid pitcher in 2014, but he was probably going on the whole sell high idea of like, well, he's not going to continue doing this. And it's like, well, guess what? Dallas Keuchel turned the corner and he did continue doing that. And, you know, Lucas Duda was fine, but in terms of winning and losing the trade, I would say I definitely won that trade. So, you know, that's one big thing, is not to get too over exuberant, you know, on things like that. But then the other thing that I find is a big mistake: people tend to get way too excited about prospects, and this is a huge thing at Baseball Prospectus. We have a lot of dynasty coverage now, a lot of prospect coverage. It's all terrific, and I think you're going to see more of that this year too, because so many rookies like Carlos Correa and Kyle Schwarber and, you know, Miguel Sano, they came up last year and were productive, but the odds of that happening player by player are still very low. You know, somebody, another expert, I think Laura Michaels with Masters Ball, he sent this question out to a bunch of fantasy experts where someone traded Corey Seager for Chris Sale. And he was asking, you know, is that a trade that you would make? And I was like, well, heck no, because Chris Sale right now is great. Corey Seager, you know, and putting aside, you know, salaries and salary cap and all that, Corey Seager probably has a 10 to 15% chance of being what Sale is now. And that, people do that so many times. They make that trade. We're like, oh, you know, this guy's future is going to be great. Like, you just don't know that. So those are two big ones. There's definitely other mistakes that people make that are more granular, but I think of other topics, and I don't want to, you know, rattle off too much on this.
So I've seen people say something to the effect of never make a trade before, you know, Memorial Day, or never make a trade before May. Do you kind of subscribe to that theory, or do you think that's a little bit of, I don't know, hogwash, I guess is the worst word I could have come up with there?
Sort of. What I tend to try to do, it's probably not Memorial Day, but the first 2 to 3 weeks, I'll kind of want to see my team coalesce. And Memorial Day is too long, particularly, again, in a shallower league, where if you wait too long, you might miss out on some opportunities. But in the team that you draft, so if you have faith in your drafting ability, or if you're using a good system, you know, whether it's Baseball Prospectus, PFM, or something else, you should believe in the team you draft and in your values. And unless you drafted an imbalanced team, like you took too much pitching or too much hitting and have an immediate need, you should probably wait to see what happens and how things shake out. So I don't, the Memorial Day is too long, but yeah, I would say 2 or 3 weeks is probably the amount of time you kind of want to wait and see how things shake out.
Okay, and I don't want to allude to another fantasy expert by any stretch, but don't pay for saves is certainly a cliche that you've seen kind of through fantasy baseball. Where are you in that cliche? Where do you stand on that, you know, line?
I don't like to pay too much for saves, so I don't like to reach. It's okay for me to take an elite reliever with skills like a Wade Davis or a Craig Kimbrell or an Aroldis Chapman. I mean, his value's going to be down a little bit this year. But just generally speaking, what I don't like to do, particularly in a draft, is take a Santiago Casilla or a Brad Ziegler, because I'm looking at the board and going, well, I have to get a closer here because, you know, I only have one or I don't have one yet. I would rather dump saves or be a little deficient and pick someone up later, or if it's an only league, be short in the category. There's just so much danger in overreaching in a draft, and whether it's or overreaching with your auction dollars and taking somebody and just getting absolutely nothing out of it. You know, if you take a hitter who has a disappointing year, he'll probably stay in the lineup and still produce something. If you have one of those middling closers, like if Ziegler this year blows up and isn't the closer, he strikes out almost nobody. Mm. So you're just not going to get a lot of value out of him outside of those saves. I'm not saying you avoid Ziegler. He could be fine, but I'm looking at it more from a value perspective.
Right. And you touched on this a second ago, but I want to circle back and maybe ask a little deeper of when is it the right time, or when do you know to drop somebody that you drafted or, you know, have on your roster? And kind of similarly, when do you know it's time to pick somebody up?
There isn't really a science to that, I'm afraid. There's a lot of feel, and some of it is the experience of seeing a player, seeing, you know, him do well for, it's balancing seeing him do well for maybe a week or two versus waiting too long. With pitchers, I believe you have to be a little bit more aggressive. Mm. If a pitcher has a strong start or two, I remember this with, I think it was Noah Syndergaard last year. I was in a league where it was a shallow league, you couldn't add a pitcher like that on reserve. With someone like that, you have to act really because if you don't, someone's just going to come in and take him. So there's some percentage of managing your risk portfolio. I wish I had a better answer to this, because honestly, it depends on the player, it depends on the league, it depends on the situation. I generally try to take a starter, a start before the buzz starts with him. But with a hitter, I don't mind waiting a little bit longer. Just because if you're getting excited over 2 or 3 games, sometimes you can be a little overhyped on that.
Well, and if the pitcher can deal at AAA, he can probably throw those same pitches at the majors, whereas the hitting adjustment might be a little...
Yeah, there's that, and there's also the idea that the pitcher, if he saw, I remember this with Aaron Nola when he came up last year, if the pitcher's pitching well in AAA, the hitters are the ones that are going to have the adjustment period. So, yeah, absolutely. You have a bit of an advantage with that, where you have a handful of starts before the hitters start to catch up and see the guy and go, okay, well, you know, we know what we're doing here. At least we're gonna have a plan. Was, you know, you look at the other way, Addison Russell, with the exception of Enolo last year, when he came up last year, I think his first week he was like 4-for-23 or something like that, and he kind of struggled out of the gate. George Springer, his first year was kind of the same thing, his first week before he got hot. So these are bad examples because they're top prospects and you still want to grab them, but there is that idea for a hitter coming right out of the gate, and particularly in a 12 team where there's, you know, every at bat and, you know, every stat you're getting counts. If you can't stash those guys on reserve, you do lose out a little bit.
Well, and before we move on from kind of this general idea, is there just any other piece of strategy that you've got sticking in your head or anything that we should key on when we're in our drafts or during the season?
Well, my draft strategy for the first, let's say in labor of 15 teams, for the first 8 to 10 rounds, I tend to go best player off the board, maybe 10 rounds. And then after that is when I start looking at need. Now, I know some people are different. Some people will really focus on need as early as the 4th or 5th round. I don't like to do that because you lose some opportunity. There's some opportunity cost to that. And what winds up happening is you take a bunch of your favorite players or a bunch of guys that you kind of have a feeling about, and you really should be looking more at value at the early point. So there'll be plenty of time to make those picks that you like later.
That's good advice, and I know I screw that up every year. That's a good call. So
it's tough to have that discipline because you're in a draft, it's moving fast, and you get excited. And as much as people want to win, and I certainly do too, it's tough to lay off a player that you're like, oh, I like this guy, and I've had him 3 years in a row, or he's the guy that I've been scouting that people in my league aren't as high on.
That's a great point. It sounds like Corey Seager this year is probably a name that jumps out just like that. So
yeah.
And you gave me a perfect transition, if I can use it, when you started talking about labor in your last answer. So I want to talk a little bit about labor. I know you did or participated in the mixed draft, I don't know, goodness, 6, 7, 8 weeks ago now, sometime just in January. I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit, give you the floor to, you know, talk about your roster a little bit and some of your general thoughts from that draft.
Well, just to give everybody a background, so labor is one of the oldest, or is the oldest expert league out there, but it had been an NLAL only pair of leagues up until, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. Brett Sarah and I, from Baseball Prospectus, were invited to the league in 2014. We did very badly. We finished 14th. Some of that was Jose Fernandez, who was our staff anchor, and once he went down, it was over for us. but some of it was we put together a team of very predictable, boring veterans, and as a result, we just tanked. So last year, we tried to balance some of those veterans with upside, and we wound up winning. A large part of the reason we won is we wound up with Jake Arrieta, Garrett Cole, and Jacob deGrom. Not late, but I think it was like the 6th, 8th, and 9th rounds, and all three of them provided first round or close to first round value. So this year, what we were looking to do is we were looking to try to kind of have some of the same principles, which was, and I mentioned this before, take the value early when it came, try to have a mix of some, you know, young emerging players, but also some, you know, players who are reliable and would provide stats, who aren't necessarily the sexiest names. So for the first few rounds of the draft, it's a pretty, I don't want to say predictable looking roster, but we had the 7th pick, which means in the 2nd round we had, I think it was the 23rd or the 24th pick, so we were kind of right in the middle. We weren't on the wheel like last year where we had 2 picks in a row. That makes it a little bit harder to dictate your team.
Mm-hmm.
But we were targeting Manny Machado with the 7th pick, and we got him, which we were really happy about. Then in the 2nd round, we were a little bit surprised by this because we weren't targeting a pitcher. We got Jake Arrieta, who was our ace, and really allowed us to wait on our next pitcher. So the next few rounds, with the exception of Wade Davis in the 5th round, who was one of the first closers to come out, we really built a strong offense. And to kind of talk a little bit about these, you know, this mix of players, we got George Springer in the 3rd round, which we were really shocked by. We thought he'd go earlier. But the floor on him, if he's healthy, looks like 2020. He could do better than that. We got Adam Jones, who is just a reliable. He missed some time last year, but he's kind of a reliable, boring player. And he's a guy who's going in at the end of the first, beginning of the second in the past, and now he drops the fourth. We thought that was great. I mentioned Davis. We got Matt Carpenter in the sixth, who probably of all the players we got at the beginning, I'm least excited about just because the ceiling, there isn't much of a ceiling, but he's kind of reliable. And third base, you know, we had two third base at this point, but third base looks a little bit thin and corner looks a little bit thin. Then we, you know, it's funny, in the seventh round, we got Billy Hamilton.
And I really wanted to ask you about him, definitely, because that pick surprised me a little bit with you guys.
Yeah, you know, Hamilton's funny because he's one of those players who either you love him or you hate him. And I think Brett, my partner, has more love for him than I do. But you reach a point in the draft where, you know, he was the 97th pick. You're almost 100 picks in. It's a 15-team league, so you replaced a player. The guy coming off your bench or off the free agent pool, he's a starter, but he's not really – it's not a 12-team where the guy coming off the free agent pool is going to be a productive starter in your outfield. He's a bottom-of-the-barrel starter. So Hamilton, to me, is a guy who the floor for him is he's not starting and he's a pinch runner and he still steals 40 or 50 bases. Maybe 40. But the ceiling with him, if he plays, and we kind of saw this with him last year, for all the negatives people talk about, his stolen base percentage spiked. He got smarter with the way he ran. He still just needs to get on base about 30% of the time to steal 80 bases. There's a ton of upside in Billy Hamilton. And I get the downside as much as anybody, but people are really writing him off prematurely.
And actually, go ahead. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, just in your answer there, you kind of talked me into him because Cincinnati has no reason not to run him out there every day and kind of let him sink or swim. And you're right. The ceiling on him is 80 to 100 stolen bases, and that wins you a category by far.
And that segues to what I was going to say, Ryan, which is once we took him, the imperative to, you know, we had Machado and Springer run a little bit. But the imperative to take steals kind of just disappeared. We could draft a team where we didn't have to worry about stolen bases. So we took Brian McCann in the eighth round, which was kind of nice because in the past our catchers have been kind of lousy or just kind of mediocre. So he's certainly not the best catcher out there, but it was nice to have someone reliable. And then the ninth, we took Michael Wacha. There were a bunch of catchers out there, Wacha, Carlos Martinez, and Marcus Stroman that we liked. We decided on Wacha. We liked him a little bit better. Martinez, inning for inning, I like better, but the injury concerns have pushed him back a little bit. And then in the 10th, this was kind of our other risky pick at this point, was Hanley Ramirez. But the funny thing about Ramirez, if you look at him, and this is similar to Hamilton, at that point in the draft, his floor is it's really impressive. He's not going to run the way he used to. But if you go back and look at his numbers last year, even when he had a down year, the guy is still going to hit for power. He's in a really good lineup, assuming most of them are healthy, which means he's going to drive and runs, he's going to steal bases. The other thing with hit labor, and this is a rules thing that you have to know, when he plays five games at first base, he's eligible there for this year. So assuming he makes the team on opening day, assuming he's healthy, we'll have a first base. And we didn't take one yet, but we'll have a first base at that point. So there was a lot of that thinking there with that pick. And some of it was that we had so much offense up front that we didn't mind taking the risk.
Well, and he feels like one of those guys that people overrate him because his defense is bad, and fantasy baseball has nothing to do with defense.
Correct. The defense doesn't matter. The only way it'll matter is if he struggles at first and they have to kind of bench him or take him out early. But we're obviously hoping that doesn't happen.
I would certainly think that his hands would be able to translate, but I would have thought the same thing about left field last year. So what do I know?
Yeah, I think sometimes first base is as easy as it is relative to other positions on the diamond. There's still an adjustment period, without a doubt.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit about now. It sounds like your pitching staff, you drafted Arrieta, but now it's been a little quiet for a bit. And then your middle infield is pretty quiet thus far, you know, during your draft.
Yeah, so we took Wacha, as I mentioned, the ninth round. And
oh, that's right.
Some of what happens in these drafts is people tend to decide. This goes back to what I said earlier about advice. So we go value as opposed to we have to get a player here, we have to get a player there. And some people talking on SiriusXM about our draft thought we reached for Arrieta, but in reality, he was just a guy on our board that we thought had value there. But some of it was that we knew people were going to start taking pitchers because they felt like they had to take a pitcher. Mm-hmm. And Arrieta gave us that luxury of waiting. So there were a bunch of guys between Waka and the 13th round where we filled out with Michael Waka, James Shields, Hisashi Wakuma, and Carlos Rodon, where suddenly we're like, okay, we've got a staff of five guys where they can all strike people out with the exception of Iwakuma. They're all pretty solid pitchers. We think Shields is going to bounce back somewhat this year. And again, having that ace in Arrieta, the proposition with Arrieta is if you believe he's an ace and you believe that what he did last year, well, not a 1.77, but if you believe he could put up like a 2.4 this year, which I think he can, maybe a 2.5, you're kind of okay with that, and it gives you the flexibility to wait on some pitchers. As far as the middle infield goes, Jason Kipnis we were looking at instead of Hamilton in the 7th round. But Brett advised patience, and it kind of paid off. We took Neil Walker in the 16th, Marcus Semien in the 17th, and it's Drubal Cabrera in the 22nd. And for what all three of those guys can do, Walker doesn't run, but the other guys run a little bit. They have some power. We could get 45 home runs out of our middle infield, which, based on where we took them, is pretty solid. Now, the one weakness with this team is batting average. We do have a lot of guys that are batting average drags, and they're not, there isn't really a stud there. Machado could be that stud, but there really isn't a stud there who's going to hit 310, 320 and offset that. So if there is a problem with the team and trying to add values that go along with the batting average, but overall on offense, we really like what we did.
Yeah. And then, what about, and kind of the rest of your closer, situation and, kind of just your thoughts on the team as a whole?
Well, we took Andrew Miller in the 18th round. As you said, this draft was about a month ago. So this is before the news on Aroldis Chapman had broke. But we looked at Miller, and this goes back to what we talked about closers and philosophy. We looked at Miller like, you know, there's some closers out there. There's some guys who take a flyer on, like some of the really bad closers like Will Smith and J.J. Hoover. But we said, you know what, we'd rather take a guy we know is going to have a really good ERA, really good whip, and gets some saves. Even if Chapman wasn't suspended, it still gets like 3 to 5 saves and is a fairly reliable top-line reliever. As far as the rest of the team goes, we tried to take some starters at the back end. You can start drafting your reserves before you finish. So rather than draft a second catcher, we just took Chris Iannetta at the end, and we'll probably replace him in short order if he doesn't work out, even if it's just with a placeholder. So we took guys like Ari Dickey, Trevor Bauer, Zach Wheeler, C.J. Wilson. The idea with them and with Wheeler when he's healthy is to cycle them in for matchups, which you can do in labor, and kind of just go along with that as the season goes through and pick guys up to replace people. So then on the other side of the back end, we took a couple of gambles and a solid play to cycle in. On offense, we took Jurickson Profar and Jesse Winker, and with the idea of, well, if they play great, if they don't play, this is the end of the draft. But we did take Colby Rasmus, who people are surprised at how much power he had last year. And he's somebody, if Haley gets hurt, and Mark Teixeira, who I actually didn't mention, gets hurt, we think we can cycle him into the lineup and it will be all right.
Yeah, I mean, the batting average is a bit of a drag, but he is going to hit 20 or 25 home runs.
Yeah, and once you get to the point of batting average where once you notice that you've kind of sunk it, you might as well just buy all in.
Right.
And the hope there, you know, you're not going to win batting average, but it's enough of a variable category that you hope you don't finish last. You hope you get like 4 or 5 points.
Right. That's very true. Very, very. So what are and you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but the strengths and weaknesses of your team? Batting average seems like the weakness.
The batting average is a big weakness. Saves could be a weakness just because we only have one closer. ERA and whip, I don't want to call them a weakness, but because we didn't take a couple guys up front like some teams did, that might be more middle of the pack. The strength of the team looks like strikeouts. Wins, you never know, but it looks like wins and strikeouts could be strong. And overall, outside of the batting average, the offense projects, and it's not just our projection system. I've seen this with others too. The offense projects really strong. It's very balanced. A lot of guys potentially get at bats. A lot of really high-end potential with that offense. And if everything works out, if some of the guys I mentioned if most of them work out, there's some trade potential as well where we can move a couple players and grab the pitching we need later.
Sounds like a pretty solid team. Are you confident going into the year?
You know, as confident as you can be. We were not too confident last year when we wound up winning, and there's enough variability in these leagues. There's enough strong players. Fred Zinke of MLB.com is a good example of somebody. He's a master trader. He's a good drafter, but he's a master trader. And every year he comes in with a team that looks like he's going to finish fifth or sixth. He almost beat us last year, and you know, he's a guy to always watch. So I'm confident he's going to be competitive when we win. There's always a luck factor that it. So we'll see. It'll be fun regardless of what happens.
All right. Let me, if I can kind of take a half step back away from labor now, and I want to just talk a little general fantasy stuff with you before we get out of here. I want to give you kind of a place just to, and I don't have a better way to say this, but just players that you like maybe a little bit better than consensus this year.
Well, let's see. I'm going to try to not pick off players that I, already talked about in labor because I don't want to, sound too redundant. But let me hold on a sec. I actually have. I'm getting ready for the other expert auction I'm doing, so I can give you a pretty good idea just looking at, my spreadsheets there and what I've, what I've got going on, who I like. Someone I don't want to say I like him. I guess I like him better than anyone else. Someone I think is in a down year, but people are discounting too much, is Yoenis Cespedes. He's not going to do what he did last year, and it would be silly to suggest it. But I see this mistake in fantasy a lot, where people will look at a hot period of time and say, well, he's not that player, so you should completely discount it. It's like, well, he's capable of doing that over short bursts of time. It doesn't mean that he will. But people are going too far with Cespedes and knocking him down and saying, well, he's not going to be the player that he was. Well, he isn't. But there's still enough upside there that I see some are pushing him down, just a little bit too far. Another outfielder I like, and this is in the same vein, is Lorenzo Cain. He had a terrific year last year, but he seems to be going for a bit of a discount. People aren't counting on the power coming back. I don't think all of the power is going to come back. But, if you look at what he did last year, if you look at what Jose Altuve did last year, the two of them put up fairly comparable numbers. Granted, Altuve is a second baseman. But Kane is going like about four slots behind him right now in ADP. There's a bargain there to be had with him. Looking for players who are a little, I don't want to say like less obvious, but are a little bit further down. I don't know how deep you want to go. Mark Teixeira, I kind of like if he's healthy. He might miss a week or two at the beginning of the year, but when he was on the field last year, he's got prodigious power. He's kind of playing for a contract. I think he could be a bit of a bargain, just in those lights. Let's see who else is on that list. It could be a long list, but I'm just trying to find a few. Names of guys that I'm kind of high on that I think the market's on. I mentioned James Shields. I kind of see a bounce back coming from him. He won't necessarily do what he's done in the past or a couple years ago, but he's being drafted very low, comparable to what I believe he can earn. Another NL pitcher like that is Shelby Miller.
Yeah, that's a good name.
People aren't just looking at the wins. They're looking at the second half numbers. They're looking at the move to Arizona, but based on Baseball Spectus's DRA, deserved run average metric, which is kind of our version of FIP, Miller was 10th best qualifier in the majors last year. So the skills are definitely there. The component numbers are there. He will slip a little bit in Arizona, but he's kind of getting pushed too far down, and I see some bargain potential with him.
Okay, that's a good name. How about some players to avoid?
Players to avoid. Well,
and we all know that's within a certain degree. I mean, Garrett Cole's there at the 13th round. You take him, but it's all with it's right. Certain to a degree.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for because the names at the top are always tough because you don't necessarily want to tell people to avoid them, but you do see players like that where you're like, okay, like Trey Tulowitzki is a good example. I wouldn't say to avoid him at all costs. But he's being taken, I think, just a shade outside of 50 in ADP. And I worry, I know Toronto is a good hitting park. It's not Coors, but it's still a good hitting park, and it's a good lineup. But I still worry about him staying on the field for more than 110, 120 games. And, yeah, he's to your point, Ryan, he's fine at price. But at some point, you just kind of lose out with a player like that if you lose too much playing time with him. Who else to avoid? There's a couple guys in the National League. I know that it's one of the it's definitely Randall Grichuk. He's not somebody I want to avoid, but he went for 25 in the NL in labor. And I know these auctions, it's one price, not necessarily indicative. But people are really chasing him based on the batted ball data, based on the velocity of the balls he's hitting, based on the batted ball distance. That's all well and good, but that data doesn't necessarily mean he's going to make terrific contact or pull off an amazing season. I think those numbers sometimes get a little bit overemphasized. And let's see, on the pitching side, this is another example of price point. I don't want to say to avoid him because he's a great pitcher, but Madison Bumgarner, he went for almost 30 in labor, and he's getting drafted really high. Great pitcher. I just don't see him necessarily bumping up into that Kershaw, Scherzer, Arrieta sale group.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes after those guys, he's fine. But I've seen him getting drafted ahead of those guys in some cases, and I that's just a bit of a reach.
Yeah, I can hear that. I can definitely I can see that. Mike, before I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say to your point. I mean, what a lot of this is about isn't liking or disliking player. It's about looking at where he's being slotted and making a decision and trying, again, with a lot of what we talked about, just trying to be rational about your picks as opposed to saying, I have to have this player, and if I don't have him, then my season's going to be ruined.
All right. Before I let you go, Mike, I have a couple of names that I want to ask you about, and maybe a thumb up, thumb down, and why kind of thing.
Sure.
Carlos Correa is going, I don't know, I think he might have even gone fourth in labor this week, or in one of the big drafts this week recently. I mean, this is a guy that's 22 and has played 100 games. He's going fourth overall, top 10.
Yeah, I give him a slight thumbs down. He's certainly solid, and he's certainly a player I'd be fine having, but I would take him about 10th or 11th. There's some downside to him. You can't simply extrapolate what he did last year and say that that's what he's going to do this year, and I believe that's a mistake some people are making. So, yeah, I'd be a little cautious on him, and I certainly wouldn't take him to work.
Okay. Similar vein, Mookie Betts going, I've seen him top 30, top 40?
Yeah, also a little high, and I like Betts. I'm a fan, but I see people, he went for 35 in labor, and That's just a lot of money in a $260 auction to plunk down at a guy who really good and I expect some growth. He didn't hit 20 home runs last year and he barely stole over 20. Is he going to get to 30-30? I just don't see with his profile, particularly with the power. And for what that is, it's kind of where he's costing, I feel like that's what he has to do. So, yeah, there's a bit of a reach with Betts. I could be wrong, though. He's a skilled player and he's kind of exceeded expectations at every level so far.
That is a really well said point. Kind of on the other hand, that's a good point. And you mentioned him a little bit in your draft. You passed on him, but Marcus Stroman.
Stroman's a guy I thought would be overvalued, but I see where he's going, and I'm kind of okay with where he's being taken based on the ceiling. So, bit risky just because he didn't have many starts. His strikeout rate was low when he came back, but the gamble there is. I'm okay with the gamble there. I'm not high on Stroman. I'm not like, oh, he's a bargain, take him, or he's going like too late. But that's kind of okay with where he's gone.
Okay. Anthony Rendon.
Rendon is someone I had him in tout a couple years ago when he had that big breakthrough. I really liked him. I'm on the other side of it now. And it's not just Rendon. Players like Rendon who were injured the year before. When a player's injured, it's not the injury that bothers me. I know some people believe that past injuries lead to future injuries. I don't believe that. What bothers me with Rendon, when he was on the field, at bat for at bat, he wasn't as productive as he was in 2014. that's where I get wary, because now you're betting on not just him staying healthy, but him producing at the level he produced at previously. I'm okay with him at a certain price. I don't think I'll get him in Tout Wars, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. I notice there's always one or two people in the room who are more enthusiastic about him than I am.
And I think you make a great point, because I know I make this mistake all the time of trying to – you think you get a bargain with an injured player from the year before, but like you say, if their production's down as well, that now you're kind of counting on two things. I think that's a great – I don't know. That just struck me. It struck a chord with me. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, if you're going to go for a guy like that, like go for Giancarlo Stanton, because it's like, well, at least when he's on the field, he's productive. It's just when the field he isn't, but at least you're getting – like last year – get like what, 27 home runs in a little over half a season. Some kind of value out of the guy while you have him in your lineup.
That might be that one definitely struck a chord with me. That's going to be my gimmick or my golden rule for the season. So
that's good to hear. I got through to somebody.
And my final sleeper or my big sleeper for the season is Jonathan Scope. I just kind of want your opinion on him.
Yeah, I like Scope. He's being a little underdrafted, particularly because of power potential. The average should drop a little bit, but there was some development there. But he has a good chance of hitting at least 25 home runs, and even if that comes with a .250 batting average, that's just really hard to pass up. And now Baltimore has improved that lineup, so you could be looking. I know he's going to be batting on the lone lineup. You could look at more runs and more runs batted in particular because the lineup's better. So yeah, I like Scope. He's kind of a little undervalued based on where he's going, but he's someone I also might target just because of that upside potential.
And there's a chance he could bat second in that lineup if all of a sudden the Korean import doesn't produce and Scope starts out hot. You could see him in the two hole.
That's possible, and you know that's always something that it's why I kind of try to pay attention to like local beats and writers and local bloggers. That's something that sometimes I'm a little bit behind on. That's a good point.
So, well, Mike, I could pick your brain about fantasy guys all day long, and I can't tell you how much I learned just in this interview. But I want to be respectful of your time and let you loose here. But I want to give you a spot for your plugs before we wrap up, and where they can find your work, Twitter, and frankly anything you want to plug.
Well, so baseballperspectives.com is where I write. There's about 10 writers. We're just wrapping up. By the time you hear this, we'll be done with it. But wrapping up our positional series, so we're gearing up for the season. It is a pay site, but as I mentioned, there's about 15 fantasy articles a week. So you're definitely getting your bang for your buck there. And it's not just volume, it's quality work by me and about 9 other writers. I can be found on Twitter at Mike Gianella. Gianella, all one word. I'm not really working on anything else right now. If you are in New York City, the weekend of March 19th or March 18th, 19th, and 20th, it's Tout Wars weekend. There'll be drafts. It'll be at Sirius XM, I believe. I think they're open to the public, but there's also an event at a bar called Foley's the evening of March 19th. So if you're up in New York and you listen to this and you want to come out and meet not just me, but a bunch of these fantasy experts you see online, it's a great opportunity to do so. We're all pretty friendly, and it's a really good time.
That's a great point. Also, I'm going to point out to everybody, Sirius XM has the labor drafts that we spent some time talking about. I think they've covered all three of them, and you can find them on demand if you are so inclined to go listen back and see the how it transpired, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, and they'll be doing that with the Tout Wars drafts, too. And I have to say, if you're kind of interested in hearing the auction itself is one of those things you can listen to. The thought process of the people covering those auctions is really interesting if you're trying to learn about the game, without a doubt.
Yeah, I've listened to them myself all week, and I've really gotten to enjoy them. So I definitely highly recommend if you've got the time to kind of sit there and listen to them on demand. They're definitely worth your time. So, Mike, I want to thank you again for joining me, and I hope to have you on sometime again later this season.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks so much, and I hope to see you sometime at the park. If it's not at a BP event, then hopefully at a game somewhere.
Yeah, we keep talking about making it down to D.C., so my kids, my older daughter loves history, so we'll try to – it's not that far, so we'll try to make it down at some point in the future.
When you are, come to – please let me know. I'll buy you a beer and get you a sandwich.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And that was episode 59 of the Nats GM Show with my special guest, Baseball Prospectus's senior fantasy writer, Mike Gianella. I want to thank him very much for coming on the show and giving us so much time and educating us on fantasy baseball. I know I learned a great deal from him just in that short amount of time. So thanks, Mike. We'll definitely have you back on sometime this season. Two quick things before we get out of here. First and foremost, we are seeking a sponsor or two for the show during the season. So if you're interested in sponsoring the Nats GM Show, please head over to natsgm.com for further details. Also, we are, if you're listening to this on iTunes, if you could please rate and review and subscribe to this podcast, helps us get a larger audience and people that are searching for baseball podcasts. It helps them find us easier and better. So if you could do us that favor, that really would help us out a great deal. So thank you very much. We are done for this week. The show's a wrap. Bye for now.